I can trace every single thing that I've been able to do almost financially to this day. It comes back to that one property. So I guess it shows the importance of a little bit of luck going right, but also getting that first property right in your journey.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we're speaking with Rodney Holder, who describes his life as an ex-drummer in a heavy metal band that allowed him to tour the world, then turn that passion into a success music business podcast, which finally led him turn towards property investing for life. Speaking with Rodney Holder, he shares currently what is happening in his life.
I'm in between jobs, so that's interesting. But I am a very passionate property investor. I'm a ex-heavy metal drummer of a band that I was in for 20-odd years, which I was lucky enough to tour the world and play with all my idols and do all that kind of really cool stuff. And then off the back of that, I was a music business lecturer teaching music business studies, and I had a music business podcast. Well, I've got a music business podcast. And yeah, music has been my life. But all along doing all of that with my music stuff was my property investing, which is something now that I guess I've grown up a little bit and sort of music's taking a second place in my life, and property's overtaken. So it's on with the property journey.
A normal day for Holder starts with jiu-jitsu before taking his children to school.
At the moment, like I said, I'm unemployed, so it seems it's been great. I've been getting up nice and early and doing jiu-jitsu classes, and then taking my kids to school, which has been amazing because I've got two little kids, and so one's in kindergarten and one's in prep. So I get to make their lunches and do that, and then my day is usually I'm researching about property, or I'm watching podcasts and interviews, or I'm doing something. You know, I'm working on a number of projects at once. At the moment, I'm also doing an online course to try and bring some more money in with a Canadian rock star that I did an online course with, a guy named Devin Townsend. So, and then I'll go and pick up my kids and cook dinner and watch a bit of telly with my wife and rinse and repeat. It's been it's quite good at the moment, not having the responsibility of having to go to work.
He also explains how important being a stay-at-home dad is.
It is, and at such an important age, I feel very lucky that not many dads get to do what I do and be there for their kids at that important time. So right now I'm just savouring all of it.
At 17, Holder found his passion while subbing in as a drummer for a heavy metal band.
I grew up in Canberra, which a lot of people thought was very sort of boring and just sort of the land of roundabouts and porn. But Canberra actually had a really vibrant and thumping music scene back in the late 80s, early 90s, and I was lucky enough to be a part of that. I joined a heavy metal band called Alchemist back in 1988, and we basically stayed together till about 2010. And off the back of that band, you know, we grew this great scene along with a lot of other bands, and we were very, very dedicated and motivated, and we worked very hard, and we got signed to a couple of different record labels, and we did a lot of touring. And like I said, I got to tour with all my idols and meet a lot of the rock stars I grew up with, their posters on my walls, and got to tour the world and got that little sort of taste of being a bit of a rock star, I suppose. It was a lot of fun. And I very much loved it. And it also really prepared me, I think, for, for business life and property investing life, because, you know, the music industry is so hard to crack. So it made me very resourceful. So, yeah, that's kind of my story. And music was my life, and playing the drums was my life, and playing extreme heavy metal. I loved it.
Gosh, when did you start to play the drums?
It's a funny story, you know, because by the age of 17, I still hadn't, I wasn't really even a musician. And I went to a party one day, and there was a really bad band playing, a bad heavy metal band, and the drummer he had snuck off to have a bit of nookie with his girlfriend, and the band said, "Hey mate, do you want to jump in on the drums? You reckon?" So I just sort of picked up the sticks, and I just had a knack for it. So they ended up sacking that guy, and they said, "Well, do you want to be the drummer?" And I loved it. So I didn't start till I was 17, and by the time I was 19, I was pretty good. That was my story. I was just addicted to it.
That's amazing. So pretty much at the end, or towards the end of high school, that would be that age before going into either tertiary studies or going out to work, that's when you actually picked up the drums and got into that scene. Is that right?
Yeah, that's pretty much right. Yeah, I was actually a year younger than all my friends. So I actually finished year 12 when I was just turned 17. So I had a year of up on all my mates. But that was the time. Yeah, I was 17 when I started playing the drums. And like I said, I was never one of those drummers who wanted to be the best drummer, but I did want to be the best heavy metal sort of in the best heavy metal band I could be. And so, yeah, I practiced really hard, and I was lucky enough to find a bunch of guys that had the same vision. And, yeah, we pretty much went for it for a good 15, 20 years before we sort of started to have kids and slow down and realize, you know, it's probably time to maybe grow up for.
It wasn't all fun and games, though. Holder had to work part-time jobs on the side to be able to pay the bills.
I was working at the Hyatt Hotel, and I worked there until they told me I had to cut my hair. And I thought, well, I'm not going to do that. How can I be in a heavy metal band with short hair? Which is ironic because people who don't know me, I've had a shaved bald head for the last 20 years. But no, I just did odd jobs because the band came first. So it was pretty much whatever job I could take, I would take. And then in the end, I actually ended up managing a pub. The good old Kingston Hotel. Some listeners might know that in Kingston in Canberra. And the boss was really great because when I said, okay, well, I need the next 6 weeks off to go on tour, he was like, okay, no worries. And then when I got back, you know, I had a job to come to. So, yeah, all of the guys pretty much had to quit jobs at various times so that we could feed our heavy metal addiction.
He completed a Bachelor of Communications and Media in university while drumming away with his band.
My dad is a hard ass. Well, he was. He's retired now, but he was a hard ass copper. And he's like, mate, you can't just be playing the drums all day and doing nothing. This is not on. So I thought, well, if I go to uni, that'll buy me some time before the band becomes famous. So I went and studied communication and media. And so that was great. I really enjoyed doing that degree. And to be honest, though, it was really just a front so that I could not have to go and get a full-time job, and I could go off and play with the band. But, yeah, so I came out of that, and then as a result of doing my degree, I was actually lucky enough. In Canberra, there was a music business college started up at TAFE, and I landed the job as the music business coordinator because I had the, I guess, the academic piece of paper. But also, you know, I was literally that guy. I was the guy in the band that was booking all the shows. I was negotiating the record deals. We also ran a metal festival. So we ran the largest heavy metal festival in Australia at that time, a charity concert called Metal for the Brain. And so I was doing all of these great things, and that was my first real job. So I was actually getting paid like a serious salary, and I felt like one of the luckiest guys in the world because I was playing in my band. I was getting paid to teach other people about, you know, copyright and contracts and negotiations and marketing and all that stuff that I was doing. And I was earning some really good coin, which I guess led into my first property investment.
That's amazing. And that's the thing. You're doing something that you're passionate about. You tie both together. One is, you know, work that you do at the TAFE, and then the other one where you're actually playing, you know, in a band. It's like the perfect dream positions that you've got there. And that's amazing.
Yeah, I was very, very lucky, Tyrone. But I think, you know, your luck is if you work hard, then those opportunities come around so that you can jump on those lucky opportunities. I think that's what luck is.
Holder ventured down the property path with a push from his father.
It brings back fond memories because I'd saved up $10,000 and I thought, well, what am I going to do? And I actually thought, right, I'm going to go overseas and I'm going to have, you know, do the big thing without the band. You know, we'd done a lot of travel with the band, but I thought I'm just going to go over and do the touristy thing. And I actually sat down with my dad one day and he just kind of said to me, he said, mate, if you go overseas and blow all your 10 grand, that's fine. You'll have the experience. But when you come back, you'll have nothing to come back to. But he said, by the way, I was just about to turn 30 too. So I think there was a psychological thing going on in my brain at this stage in my life. And my dad sort of said, But if you buy a house, you can always save that money again. And then when you come back, you've got your house to come back to. And my dad's a pretty wise guy. And I thought, you know what, that makes a lot of sense. So I started looking to buy a house. I had enough money that I'd saved up because, I was a bachelor. I didn't have any kids. My only really expenses was myself, and I was earning a good wage. My dad had a friend who was a property investor and also a real estate agent. And he sort of said, I was looking at these, brand new units, and he said, no, you should buy yourself a nice big old house in the suburbs of Canberra on a big block of land. And I ended up finding one that needed a complete renovation. It was a really run-down old thing in the suburb of Higgins on a really big block. And because I was studying negotiations and teaching that as a part of my teaching, I thought I'd try out a few of the techniques that I'd learned. And I was able to really negotiate and get a great deal on my very first property, which is what kind of set me up. And it also showed me that, no offense to real estate agents, but the real estate agent was really only in it for himself. He didn't really worry too much about the vendor. And I was able to get this great bargain of a house, even though it was completely unrenovated. I thought, well, that's cool. I'll be able to have big sort of heavy metal parties, and if someone puts their foot through the wall or whatever, it doesn't really matter. And that's actually what I did. It became a bit of a party house, and I've still got that house today, and I can trace every single thing that I've been able to do almost financially to this day. Yeah, it comes back to that one property. So I guess it shows the importance of a little bit of luck going right, but also getting that first property right in your journey.
Yeah, and that would be a very sentimental property too, because if your band played there, it brings back a lot of good memories too.
Oh my God. I mean, you can, the neighbors will attest, some of the parties that happened back there in the early 2000s were pretty crazy. we had a spa bath out the back, and it was lots of fun. But
it sounds like the perfect place to hang out when Rodney has a party. So.
It was pretty good times, no doubt.
Coming up after the break, we'll delve deep into Rodney Holder's property investing journey.
I remember thinking, holy crap, I've bought a house. How am I going to afford these repayments,
How they grew their portfolio.
When I look at how much the property had grown in value, it was really, the bank manager was sort of saying to me, oh, well, there's more here to come. You can come and get it if you want it.
And that's next. I'm Tarun Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Holder shares with us when he purchased his first property investment.
I settled on that property in October 2000. And I remember, because I can remember moving in and going, I was really, really scared. I remember thinking, holy crap, I've bought a house. How am I going to afford these repayments, And I thought, well, what I'll do is, and this has been another, key to my ability to continue to invest, is that I got my best buddies in and I said, hey guys, do you want to come and live with me? Do the group house thing. And so it was a two-story house. I lived upstairs and they lived downstairs, and they both gave me $100 a week. So I was getting like $800 a month rent from my buddies, and I think the mortgage was $1,000 a month. So
that's the best situation to be in.
Yeah. And also when I went on tour to play, they were there to look after my dog and make sure no one broke into the house and keep the lights on and all that sort of thing. So, yeah, it worked out really, really good. So, I gave my buddy somewhere to stay, and we created this great party house. But at the same time, I had this really ugly duckling asset, which I only actually renovated at the beginning of last year. So it stayed ugly for about 18 years.
Well, to be honest, if there's nothing wrong with it, why fix it? Unless you need to, if you're going to add value to it now, there's no reason why, because it's generating obviously good income for you. So
yeah, that's
just,
right.
It's usually those ones that people don't bother touching. It's funny, actually, we mentioned that, because there's a lot of places I've been around in Sydney, and you know how a lot of doctors like to buy houses to do and run their clinics or medical centers out, and you think, mm-hmm. It's probably one of the cheaper options, because then you don't have to actually go and buy a block of land and build a brand new clinic and stuff like that. And a lot of times they just fit it out the bare minimum to, get the clients in there. And you just think, wow, it's a sufficient enough place, but there could be, a better investment to actually put more money into making it look better for just their clientele coming through. But, doctors don't really care. They just want to get the clients in, and that's it. So, mm-hmm. It kind of just reminds me of those kind of things that if it's not broken, why fix it?
Yeah, well, what ended up happening was that I moved to Brisbane, my buddies kind of said, well, we'll continue renting. It was a different set of buddies, but I had some buddies and they moved in, and they basically lived in my unrenovated house for cheap rent for, about 14 years. So,
wow.
Yeah, I was getting, you know, the mortgage repaid, plus by this stage the rent had gone up to give me a little bit of extra positive cash flow, and it also, you know, enabled me to pay all the rates and all those other hot water bill that went occasionally, a hot water system, etc. But they were happy because they were living in cheap accommodation, and then I had someone paying off my asset for me. It was great.
It wasn't always smooth sailing. Holder faced some hardships while renting out his property.
If I was to talk about probably the lowest time, it's going back to that first house. And last year, one of my said friends that I was telling you about that had rented out the house for so long, he just stopped paying the rent. And it was like, this is kind of strange because, you know, this guy had been paying the rent every fortnight for, 14 odd years. And when I sort of rang up, there was an excuse, and then it was late, and then, you know, it happened again. And in the end, I had to sort of, I had to kick my buddy out of the house, essentially. I had to say, look, you've got to leave, man, because this is not going to, we can't do this any longer. And I found out that he'd lost his job, and he was suffering depression and all this other stuff. So there was a real kind of like, it was hard for me to kick out him as my tenant because he was also my mate, particularly at a time when he was going through a hard period. But, you know, I had to put my business hat on and say, well, I can't, and I refuse to be just paying the mortgage while you're living there rent free. So that wasn't the greatest thing. And then, of course, because he'd lived there as a party house for 14 years in this rent house that, you know, was completely unrenovated, that was when I said, okay, well, now I have to do the complete renovation. So, but, you know, to answer your question, like I said, Tyrone, I've been really, really lucky, and that's probably the worst thing that's happened to me. I don't know. Someone's looking out for me, or I'm not really religious or anything, but touch wood, I haven't had it too bad.
Holder's aha moment came when he bought that first property and paved the way for his future investments.
If I go back to this first house in Higgins that I'm telling you about, I bought that in, October 2000, and lived in that with my buddies for a couple of years. And I can't remember, but there was the big property boom of about 2003-2004, and I realized that the house that I actually paid $150,000 for this home in Canberra, and within the space of about 18 months it was valued at $350,000. And I remember just thinking, holy shit, this is why people get into property. This is amazing. Like I didn't have to sort of wait for no capital growth. It just basically landed on my doorstep, and so right at the time of leaving Canberra to come to Brisbane, I didn't actually have a job to come to. I'd left this great job and moved to Brisbane, and I was actually doing it pretty hard financially myself. And my bank manager said, "Well, you've got all this equity in your property now. What you can do is you could just get a line of credit, and that'll kind of solve all your problems." And so I said, "You can do that?" And they were like, "Yeah." So here I was in Brisbane with no job and no money and still touring with my band, and had a nice pile of cash that I could access to continue to fund my lifestyle until I could get myself back on my feet. So I guess those two things happening was where I went, wow, property can go up in value, and it has for me quite significantly, which is amazing. And secondly, I can also access that money, and I know it's smarter to probably invest with it, but at that time, my own personal circumstance, it actually enabled me to survive. So I was able to pay all my bills and my debts, and fund my my addiction to heavy metal, and and live without getting a proper job for quite a while until I was able to land a good job in Brisbane.
However, Holder knew that he couldn't afford to go on like this and had to get a job.
Well, I was working part-time when I got to Brisbane, and just like, you know, crappy jobs. I think I had a job, I was doing furniture removaling, which was quite a culture shock, moving furniture in the Brisbane sun, and also working in a bottle shop. So when I wasn't touring, I was actually working, but I was on a really sort of like low wage. And so when it came time for, you know, the rates or the insurance or by this stage, I'd bought more properties, by the way. So I was getting, you know, this body corporate and sinking fund. It enabled me to tap into that equity and basically fund the shortfall of funds that I had. And that probably lasted me that money for 2 years.
Oh, that's really good. That's amazing. Yeah.
And when I look at how much the property had grown in value, it was really, you know, the bank manager was sort of saying to me, oh, well, there's more here to come. You can come and get it if you want it. I know it's a lot different now, but I was aware of not just sort of like plowing in and using up my equity, but it certainly did help me. So that is a part of my story.
Inspired by his grandfather's dying words, Holder moved to Brisbane to be with the girl he was most fond of.
Well, when we were touring here, I always loved Brisbane. Brisbane was just such a stark contrast to Canberra, particularly in the winter. And I'd lived all my life in Canberra. And it was actually my grandfather, he was on his deathbed, and he sort of said to me, you know, your life goes so quick that you got to do what you got to do. And, you know, the only thing holding me back in Canberra was my band. And I met a girl I was very fond of, and she lived in Brisbane. And I just thought, you know what? I'm just going to chuck it all in. I'm just going to do it. And so it was just one of those things where I threw in this great job. I threw in, I thought I was throwing in the band, but I was actually able to talk them into allowing me to stay in the band whilst they lived in Canberra and I lived in Brisbane. Obviously, it made rehearsals harder, but we kept it together. And that's why I moved up here. And I really love Brisbane. I've been told by my next-door neighbour that I'm not allowed to say I'm a Brisbane guy till I've lived here for 20 years, and this year 16 years. So I'm nearly a Queenslander.
I don't know if that one rings true, but, you know, if you've been living there for 16 years, I have no problem calling you a Queenslander.
Yeah, well, I must admit, when I go back to Canberra, it seems like an alien place now. It's so different from when I was there. But
yeah, I can imagine. So when was the last time you went back to Canberra?
Well, it was last year to do that renovation on that first house. I went down and I rolled up my sleeves. There was, if you can imagine, this completely filthy, ugly house. Here's a good story. I rang up a couple of real estate agents and I said, can you give me a valuation on this property? Because I knew that the Canberra market was going up. And they said, look, in the state it's in, you might be lucky to get maybe 470, 480 for the property. Because like I said, it's a pretty big property. It's got, two-story and three bedrooms at the time. I added a fourth bedroom. And then after the renovation, I spent about 80K on the reno, and then the bank val came in at 700. So I was wrapped.
Inspired by this story and what Rodney Holder has in store for the future, we'll keep the conversation going in a future episode on Property Investory. We'll learn about his approach to investing strategies, his reasons behind why he started this journey, the best advice he's received, and that's next time in a future episode of Property Investory.